The title of my talk today is A Beautiful Death. Now, when we usually think about death, a beautiful death isn't what we think about. We have many other thoughts that might be related to death, and we hope that we might have a beautiful death. But many of the ways in which we've been introduced to death just don't support us in feeling that we can have a beautiful death. In other words, we learn primarily one of two things. Either we learn that when we die, if we've been good, we go to heaven, or if we haven't been good, then we go to hell. And or we learn that we are living one of many lifetimes, and that when we die, it's most likely that due to our karma, we will be reincarnated and then live another lifetime where we hopefully can have a better life. And so when we live under the pall of points of view such as the two I have just mentioned, heaven and hell, or karma and reincarnation, then we feel very restricted within our life. We feel that death is the context of our life because it's inevitable for everyone. And in terms of death as a point of view, we view it as the final insult of life, the final assault of life against us, the final assault that life has against us as a somebody, and that our life will end, and that it's death, this enemy death, that will take it away. And not only do we view this, if we don't view death as an enemy, we may at least view it as a foe. And the only reason we do so is because we don't really know enough about death. And so I would like to talk about my sister Mary's death as an example of my own experience of going through death with someone very close to me, and actually seeing how that came about for her, and also my own experience of it and that of my family members. As many of you know, I am the oldest of six children, and my sister Mary was born 10 months later. I was born in June of 1947, and she was born at the beginning of May of 1948. And so Mary and I had a very special closeness because we knew each other before either of us was enmeshed in language. We had a bond that was pre-verbal. It came before language. It was a type of connection that was just based on a simple heart connection of two very small people. And in 1991, my sister called me and told me that she had malignant melanoma. And of course, when I heard that news, I was shocked. We were young at the time, in our 40s. And it just wasn't something that I had encountered in terms of a family member, especially a sibling who was close to me, having a serious illness. So this feeling of shock, and at the same time the spaciousness of the shock, occurred instantaneously, simultaneously, not with spaciousness being one thing and shock being the other, but that the spaciousness is the underlying reality of the shock itself. And, you know, in my response to her, I just said, well, come to Bolinas right away. Come to Bolinas and visit me. So she did. She came to Bolinas right away. And we had a very lovely time together, a very close and intimate time together. And she said, well, you know, they've taken the malignant melanoma out of my back, and they've told me that there's no chance of it recurring, that I'll be just fine. So we thought, well, you know, this is good. She's going to be just fine. But at the same time, I had an underlying uneasiness about what she had said. And over the next few years, I continued to feel somewhat uneasy as she would go in for her six-month checkups, and they said that everything was all right at the University of Washington Medical Center, and she was traveling there from Portland to have her checkups at an excellent clinic. And so then in 1995, in October, she called me, and she was in the hospital. She said, oh, I'm so sick. She said, I just got back from Mexico, and I was staying at Mom's, and I woke up during the night, and I was just dreadfully ill. I couldn't stop vomiting, and there wasn't anything I could do but go to the hospital. So I came here, and they said that I'm going to have surgery right away, that there's something in my abdomen, and they think it's cancer. And so she had the surgery, and sure enough, it was cancer. And at first they said it was unrelated to the melanoma, but then they concluded that it was melanoma and that this melanoma had spread throughout her body and that she would die. And so, of course, when families hear news like this, everyone in the family has their own reaction based on who they take themselves to be and who they take their sibling to be. And all of those reactions occurred in my family, and they occurred within Mary too. And her practice of Tibetan Buddhism was something that she really relied on at that time to support her. She really relied on the Tibetan Book of the Dead as a support for herself as she went through this process. And she relied on other things, too, to come to terms with her impending death. And then, and she did so. She really came to terms with the fact that she was dying and that this was the end of her life. And in May of 1996, right at the end of May, she was told that she had 2 months to live. Then at the end of June, she called me and she said, me, you've got to come to Portland right away. She said, I'm dying, and I'm going to die within a couple of days. So I went up to Portland, and all of my other brothers and sisters came from here and there, and my sister Mary was at home, and we all gathered with her, and she called us all in the morning. She said, I'm going to die today. So we all went over to her house, and we gathered around her in her big brass bed in her bedroom, and she had requested that we all be there, and she had Billie Holiday music playing, and also Bonnie Raitt, and she had a big bouquet of flowers by her bedside, and she had decided that these were things that she wanted, and her friend, one of her friends who was a Tibetan Buddhist practitioner, sat in meditation there in the room as Mary was dying. And we all read to her from the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And after about 3 or 4 hours, she did die. And when she died, we were all in bed with her. So every single one of us was in bed with her, 5 brothers and sisters and my mom. And as she had her last breath, I felt her last pulse. I was holding her arm and could feel that she had her last pulse. And then, you know, I looked at her face, and she'd been quiet but suffering during her death, but a suffering of relief, of a suffering of peace, a suffering of total peace of mind. And with her last breath, I looked up at her face, and her face had gone from being calm with no smile to having the most incredible smile I have ever seen in my life. She was smiling as though she saw the most beautiful vision one could ever possibly see. And in the hours after her death, as we bathed her and changed her clothes, I could see that that smile never left. She was just in a state of utter lucidity. And that state of utter lucidity, utter and complete lucidity that is totally beyond the body is the natural state. And when we die, we slip effortlessly into that natural state of utter lucidity. And it's especially easy for us to do so if we know it's the reality of what we are. Now, when Mary died, this reality of utter lucidity that was so complete in her that she could accept so gracefully, it not only was her complete release and resolution of all points of view whatsoever, including death, but it also was so powerful and had such an immense power and force that it affected the entire family. In other words, it was a communication to the entire family that had a significant, important, and everlasting effect on my family of origin. And the effect that it had was that all of the points of view that we had had about each other, in other words, who we had taken each other to be, and whoever of us had taken others to be, whatever their past were, had happened to be. Do you know what I mean by that? That sometimes we take people to be their past when we can't really just be with them as the open spaciousness of awareness. Then we need to take people to be something. So we take them to be their past. We take them to be our accumulation of points of view about them. Well, all of those things were completely erased and dissolved among every single one of us, not just for that moment, but forever. So all subtle and overt tensions, all patterns, habitual patterns of argument, analysis, and judgment, all of them were completely dissolved in basic space. So when we talk about the importance of death, it's really important for us to realize that this death that we all will face, this death that will occur for all of us, is very much something that we can become acquainted with beforehand. And how do we become acquainted with it beforehand? We become acquainted with it by knowing who we are, just like my sister Mary became acquainted with herself. Through the practice of Tibetan Buddhism and the Great Freedom Teaching, we become familiar with ourselves through a very similar practice, and that is the gradual familiarization of ourselves with ourselves as timeless awareness. So gradually we become familiar with ourselves as timeless awareness, as the timeless awareness of basic space, the basic space that is the space of all points of view, that basic space that is totally wide open, is the essence of every single one of our points of view, including death. Now, my sister and her daughter Chelsea, who was a young adult at the time, a very young adult in her very early 20s, she had just graduated from college. They had a very close relationship, so Mary could describe to Chelsea what the process was that she was going through, and also talk to Chelsea about how she wanted to die. She talked to Chelsea and all of us about how she wanted to die. And this is up to us, each of us as well. We can write down in specific detail how we want to die. And then we can practice for our own death. We can practice for our own death by becoming familiar with the process of death and how that might occur for us. So when we become familiar with living as timeless awareness that is beyond cause and effect, effort and achievement, then we definitely have authentic signs of the culmination of that realization in our life. We have authentic signs of the culmination of that realization because more and more everything, no matter what it is supreme peace of mind that is equal to space itself. And we directly experience that peace of mind as the expanse of aware basic space itself. We find that there isn't anything that is not free within the expanse of that aware basic space. And further, we find that the true nature of everything, no matter what it is, arises naturally and is experienced intuitively by us as that basic space. And what experiences it intuitively as that basic space is basic space itself. So it's the inherent intuitiveness of timeless awareness by which it knows itself as itself. This dynamic energy of the heart essence of aware basic space is perfect within each of us. And when we die, this awareness is experienced as a oneness that is no way divisible. Because during our lifetime, we gain the empire, so to speak, of aware basic space, this natural presence of aware basic space. When we die, all we become is an emanation of benefit of that space that isn't restricted in any way. When we live as timeless awareness during our life, the more we live as timeless awareness, the more we are an emanation of that benefit. In other words, our body, speech, and mind are an emanation of the benefit of the dimension of benefit. Basic space is a dimension of benefit, and we live our life as an expression of that dimension of benefit. And we find that we more and more express that in our lives. So when we die and we experience ourselves only as the utter lucidity of basic space, then we are completely inseparable from that. We no longer have the concerns of a body. All we are is this dimension of benefit, the dimension of benefit of aware basic space. And that dimension of benefit is naturally present as timeless awareness, utterly lucid timeless awareness, without any restrictions or extremes, unlimited in every conceivable way. And this is what we directly experience in our beautiful death. So when we live our lives as timeless awareness, when we do so with the greatest diligence, and we have the great fortune of feeling like we're free. We could liken it to being the mist of basic space, and all the restrictions of our body vanish naturally. So we're alive, but all the restrictions of our body vanish naturally. And I do mean all the restrictions of the body. So we become very acquainted in a very tangible, real way with what we'll be facing at death. Even though we're still experiencing a body, we're very clear that that body is a point of view, that it's not the substance of who we are, that the substance of who we are is just this mist of aware basic space, the aware basic space that is the great reality of everything. And we may also experience ourselves being freed from the restraints of a body, rather than feeling so confined to all the vagaries of the aggregates of the body, we feel more like the space inside a vase. And or we may feel like the moon, the waning moon vanishing into the expanse of the sky. the concerns we have with ourselves as a body that is informed by thoughts, emotions, and actions, it diminishes until we feel this spaciousness, this freedom. We have this decisive experience of ourselves as that which is beyond the constraints of the body, beyond the aggregates of the body, beyond these things that have seemed to have so much significance and importance for us. And we recognize the very essence of being in terms of the reality of the resolution of all points of view, wherein awareness is decisively experienced as a naked original purity. And while we maintain this naked awareness, we realize a truly majestic, beneficial intent of that aware basic space, such that there is no coming together with it or falling away from it. There is just the full expression of unobstructed awareness as a complete freedom from extremes of being one thing and being many. As we live more and more, we gradually become familiar more and more with this decisive experience of our timeless nature, within which all circumstances that manifest outwardly or inwardly are free in their own true nature. Without losing sight of it, any attempt at suppression or indulgence of points of view, or any attempt to try to develop antidotes to afflictive emotions and concepts are done away with. They're realized to be inherently free basic space in and of themselves, inherently free aware basic space in and of themselves, and in so they resolve naturally. The experiences that arise naturally, whatever they are, we don't react to them such that they are free of restriction. It isn't that we're trying not to react to them. It's just that in resting naturally, in the natural rest, in the complete relaxation of timeless awareness, we're free without any restrictions. And so we naturally don't react. Everything is free just as it is, so there isn't any need to react. Nor is there a need to describe or seek anything in what is arising. So we no longer find the need to seek meaning or significance or importance in what is arising. Rather, we're enjoying the natural relaxation and rest of timeless awareness, the fundamental power and force of the nature of our very own being. And when we grow completely familiar with ourselves as this timeless basic spaciousness, wide open and never restrained by anything, then this experience that we've developed resolves and awareness reaches the fundamental ground of being. And finally, we're permanently established as that fundamental ground of being 24/7. We're at least established as that all day long while we're awake. And then for many of us, we may also be established as that at night. And what that means that neither during the day or at night do we have any ordinary thoughts that occur. Whether the experiences of our waking life or our sleeping life, whereas they are naturally occurring, they're naturally occurring as that upper basic space. They're naturally occurring as luminous awareness alone. So in that way, they've lost their ordinariness. They're no longer bound by having to make a story out of them. And then at that point, the direct perception of our true nature and the true nature of all phenomena, including ourselves, arises in a very straightforward way. And from then on, we abide as this fundamental reality of original awareness, of our natural awareness, our natural timeless awareness in all its nakedness and immediacy. And the word nakedness is used very pointedly because the unobstructedness of that awareness that has never had a split or division of any kind or anything within it is completely naked. It's naked of anything. It's naked of point of view. Everything is luminous awareness and nothing else. And so in this context, we leave all points of view behind. All points of view are resolved in basic space. All points of view are transcended in the basic space of our own awareness. And our practice of this, of growing familiar with this as the true reality of who we are, is what prepares us for a beautiful death. We find that nothing has ever existed as anything. And in doing so, we find an entirely new way of being, an entirely new way of being where our body, speech, and mind are entirely beneficial in nature. The actions of our body, speech, and mind, their quality and activity takes on a essence that we hadn't recognized earlier. Rather than being so absorbed in ourselves, we enter the dimension of benefit, and our thinking and our speech and actions emanate directly from that dimension of benefit, whereby we can ensure benefit for ourselves and all beings. And we develop powers of perception and powers of insight that we didn't have before, as well as many other powerful ways of being that we hadn't been acquainted with before within ourselves. So when we come to this moment of death, we are facing many points of view that we've never had before. So even though we may have had all kinds of thoughts, emotions, and experiences during our life, when it comes to death, to the point of view of death, then we have all kinds of other points of view that are associated with death. And we may find ourselves having all kinds of emotions and thoughts that we never had before. And when we've been spending our life growing more and more familiar with ourselves as timeless awareness, when we come to this moment of death, then all of these points of view associated with death, we experience those too as luminous awareness, no matter what they may be. They're unpredictable, so we don't know what they will be. But whatever they are, we experience them as luminous awareness. When we're dying, all of the functions of our body stop one by one. And when we just continue to rest as luminous awareness throughout all the functions of our body, letting go into infinite space, letting go into infinite aware basic space, then we have an exceedingly peaceful and beautiful death. We have an exceedingly peaceful and beautiful death, which becomes the greatest joy of our life. And so instead of feeling fear and clinging as we lose the abilities of all of our senses, the capacities of all of our senses, we lose our ability to see, to smell, to taste, touch, to hear. We lose all these capacities. We just continue to rest naturally as the luminous awareness of basic space. That wonderful luminous awareness that is a dimension of immeasurable joy and bliss. And then last of all, we let go of our respiration, so we don't any longer breathe in and out. We don't breathe. And we find that, wow, luminous awareness, it isn't dependent on breath either. We don't even have to breathe in order to experience timeless awareness. So then we're just resting as the complete spaciousness of luminous timeless awareness without any demands whatsoever of a body. no seeing, no touching, no tasting, no smelling, no hearing, not even any breathing. And then lastly, we let go of just of the consciousness of being somebody, just the consciousness, that bare, subtle thread of consciousness of being somebody. We let go of that, and we completely resolve into the beauty of aware basic space. So all of these things that we've taken ourselves to be, the solidity of our body, all the waters of blood that flow through our body, the fire of warmth by which we feel ourselves to be warm and alive, and the air that we breathe, all of this dissolves into the immeasurable joy and bliss of aware basic space. And lastly, we experience ourselves only as this space with no body or nothing going on whatsoever. Only this immeasurable joy and bliss of aware basic space, the heart essence of everything. We enter into a state of utter lucidity. And if during that time any other images arise or any kind of emotional experiences arise, they are experienced only as this luminous awareness. If there are any subtle lingerings of any emotions or images, they all dissolve in aware basic space. We no longer take ourselves to be any of these things in any way whatsoever. So you see, when we die, if we have this profound experience during life of the decisive reality of ourselves as timeless awareness, then when we die, it's just greater measure of that. It's much greater measure of that. It's the complete resolution of everything about ourselves, and we transfer any consciousness about being somebody, any point of view we have about being somebody, any lingering thoughts and emotions associated with being somebody. When any of those come up, we are naturally at rest as awareness of the purity of basic space, and we come to complete rest within the great reality that we've always been. So we are simply transferring from one state to another in a very complete way, is in that we're completely letting go of our physical posture. That physical posture of being somebody is completely resolved in basic space. So we could say that in a way that this is the final point of view that's resolved, the point of view of being a body that is living. And that the resolution of that point of view of being somebody who is living within a life resolves completely in the dimension of benefit, the dimension of immeasurable joy and bliss that emanates only benefit, no matter what form it may appear to take up. That appearance, that point of view, is only a dimension of benefit. So this is the great reality of ending our lives. We become timeless awareness alone. We realize that timeless awareness alone that we've always already been, and that timeless awareness is entirely empty of being anybody, yet at the same time it is naturally present as a dimension of dynamic benefit. Thus, we've become free as the reality of the original purity, the original nakedness of aware basic space. And we have reached the ultimate secret embrace of the specious of the precious natural presence of aware basic space, we find that we are that secret embrace of the precious natural presence of aware basic space. And as the beneficial emanations for all beings arise within that context, there's nothing else that remains. There's only that dimension of profound benefit that is directly experienced by itself as a measurable joy and bliss. This is the reality of what we face when we die. So when we give this to ourselves, this is a very great gift. We give ourselves the gift of a beautiful death. And then we can also support each other in a beautiful death. What more intimate way to be with ourselves and to be with each other than to serve each other and having a beautiful death? Death, rather than being something to be feared, is something that we can embrace, something that we can look forward to as part of this wonderful adventure of living as timeless awareness. It offers us an opportunity to completely resolve very subtle points of view associated with the fear of death. And we can just allow ourselves to relax completely in the basic space of our true reality. Does anyone have a question they'd like to ask at this time?
I am a little curious about the Tibetan Book of the Dead. I've never read it.
Mm-hmm.
So, as it would correlate to the Great Freedom Teaching, are there details?
The Tibetan Book of the Dead was written at a time and in a culture where the teaching was very specific to that culture and its belief systems and assumptions. The Great Freedom Teaching has a teaching on death as well, and it is specific to the time in which we live. So that's a very, very important distinction between the two documents.
Okay.
The basic teaching on death is the teaching that I have just given here on this call. And as I said also, this is a written teaching. So the written teaching will be completed by the beginning of September. And both the written teaching and my talks on death will be available not only for participants in Great Freedom, but for anyone in the world to listen to or read. It's important for us to support ourselves in dying in a very simple way. In other words, we don't need to haul in a bunch of belief systems and assumptions that don't relate to our own experience. The way in which people lived thousands of years ago and the way in which people live today and the belief systems and assumptions associated with small cultural groups living within confined geographical territories and having very specific customs and beliefs related to those territories, and people who are living in a global human culture, their needs, their beliefs, and their assumptions are vastly different. So we have to be very clear, concise, precise, and specific in developing teaching instructions on death that relate to the beliefs people have today, rather than trying to adopt beliefs that don't have anything to do with the culture in which we live today. It's very important for us. So now we have a specific teaching instruction on death that will serve each of us and also will serve us in serving others. So, you know, what could be more beautiful than that? To give the gift of death rather than the gift of a beautiful death, rather than not knowing what to say or dying alone and afraid or dying with fears about what's going to happen next. We have a direct instruction on living a beautiful life and dying a beautiful death through the Great Freedom Teaching.
Thank you.
You're welcome.